It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It used to be that Iowa felons, offenders, automatically regained their voting rights after they'd served their time and left state supervision. Then, in 2011, Governor Branstad changed that. And since that time, a felon has to go through an application process, and then the governor decides if he or she can vote again. Currently, that means there are around 14,000 felons in the state of Iowa who can't vote. Iowa is one of just three states where felons cannot vote after completing their sentences unless their rights are restored by the governor. This half hour, we want to hear from guests who are advocating change. Among them, Steve Drahozal. He is a Dubuque-based attorney speaking on behalf of the Dubuque NAACP. He joins us by phone. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Also with us, Justin McCarthy. He's a convicted felon from Dubuque. Justin, welcome to our program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Let's start with you, Steve. You wrote a petition at the request of the NAACP Dubuque chapter. What does the petition want?
What we are asking for is we directed it to Senate President Pam Yocum, Speaker of the House Craig Paulson, and to Governor Branstad himself, asking these policymakers to revisit this issue and either deal with this issue legislatively or through changing the governor's policy and going back to previous Governor Vilsack's policy of allowing felons who have discharged their sentences to be allowed to vote.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked with Governor Branstad's office this morning, reached out to them. They provided this statement with the governor's position. Just let me read the brief statement. The Iowa Constitution requires felons to lose their voting rights. The Iowa Constitution states, quote, a person convicted of any infamous crime shall not be entitled to the privilege of an elector. The governor, this is from the governor's office, continuing the quote, the governor doesn't comment on specific criminal cases, but generally believes that the Iowa Constitution is correct in that an individual convicted of an infamous crime loses their voting rights. The governor intends to defend the policy outlined in the Iowa Constitution that those convicted of infamous crimes should be required to lose their voting rights. Governor Branstad regularly restores voting rights for felons who have applied to our office and paid restitution to their victims. Why is that not a good position as far as you're concerned in the NAACP, Steve? You can apply after you've served your time or off probation, and the governor can grant that based on the information you provide.
Well, there are a couple of problems with the governor's position. With all due respect to the governor's office, the Iowa Constitution does not require that felons be disenfranchised. The actual text in the Iowa Constitution requires that persons convicted of, quote, infamous crimes, close quote. The legislature defines an infamous crime as anything defined as a felony under Iowa law or federal law, which seems pretty straightforward, except that that is the legislature saying what that term in the Constitution means. And I'm not entirely sure that that's what it means either, because there's been a recent decision that says that an OWI second, an aggravated misdemeanor, is not an infamous crime, even though an aggravated misdemeanor carries a maximum penalty of 2 years in prison and under federal law would be classified for sentencing purposes as a felony. The other issue with this is that it puts the onus back on someone who is trying to reintegrate into society. Those of us in society want people to vote, and there is a financial component that goes along with this. It's not just a matter of asking the governor to get one's rights restored. One has to purchase, to obtain from the Department of Criminal Investigation, your criminal history, which imposes a financial burden on it. And, of course, we know that there are thousands of Iowans who have discharged their sentences, but only dozens have been restored. So there is an issue with that as well. But the issue that the NAACP has with it is that there is a disparate impact on African Americans with this policy. Currently in Iowa, the policy has disenfranchised more than 1 in 14 African Americans who would otherwise be allowed to vote, or that amounts to about 7% of the adult voting age population in Iowa that are disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying, Steve, that there's a political motivation for Governor Branstad doing this, given that African Americans in recent elections have been voting Democratic?
I don't I don't know what the governor's motivation for this is. They have never, to my knowledge, the governor's office has never said that Governor Vilsack's action was unconstitutional. Governor Vilsack's previous Executive Order 40, which automatically restored the voting rights for felons who have discharged their sentences and have not subsequently been convicted, to my knowledge, was never challenged as being unconstitutional. So I understand their position is saying that they're defending the Constitution, but I don't understand the current policy of that has such a disparate impact on African Americans.
Okay. Steve, stay with us. Dubuque-based attorney Steve Drahozal, speaking on behalf of the Dubuque NAACP with this this petition. Justin McCarthy, you are a convicted felon from Dubuque who is petitioning to get his right to vote back. Give us some background. Tell us what were you convicted of and when?
In 2006, I was convicted at the federal level of a user of controlled substance in possession of a firearm. I got arrested with 2 ounces of weed here in Dubuque, and then I got... Also, at the same time, they found a 22 rifle and a 20-gauge shotgun in my home.
Mm-hmm. And what time did you serve?
I got sentenced to 15 months in federal prison. I did 12 months in the prison and then another, I want to say, 39 days in the halfway house. And then I got 56 days good time out of that. And then I had to do another 3 years supervised release afterwards.
So you were part of this drive to get the vote, the right to vote back, for have it automatic after convicted felons have served their sentences. Why is this important for you?
Well, I mean, since I got out of prison and turned my life around, I started a family, went back to school. I'm starting a career. You know, I'm paying into the tax pool to be able to do all this stuff that the state wants to do, fix roads and everything. But I don't have a say in how that money's spent. I'm just kind of, you know, there to fund it and sit back and watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, the governor says, though, that there is a process. You need to apply. And even though the numbers are indeed small, we have 14,000 who have served their sentences here in Iowa, felons, approximately 14,000. 40-some have been granted the right to vote by the governor. Why not go down that path?
I thought about it, but I mean, I'm a college student. I don't make a whole lot of money. I don't really feel that I should have to pay out extra, in my mind, fines to, you know, get my criminal history report, my credit history report, send that all in just for the odd chance that the governor is going to say, oh, yeah, let him vote.
Mm-hmm. So are you fighting this battle for more than just your right for other convicted felons, you're saying?
Yeah, I don't see why anybody should have to jump through flaming hoops when their debt's been repaid to society. We should get back what we had. I mean, rights, to me, are not a privilege. A privilege is, you know, your driver's license. Sweet, I didn't pay my fines. You can take away my privilege of driving. But rights are guaranteed to me, not just in the Iowa Constitution, but in the federal Constitution.
Steve, can you tell us approximately how much the process... the application process to be reviewed by the governor costs? You know that?
I don't know the cost of obtaining your entire credit history. I do know that there's a process where annually every citizen or every person can get their credit history for free. I do know that to obtain the Department of Corrections, or excuse me, the Iowa Department of Criminal Investigations report is $15.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking about the change that was made in 2011 of it used to be automatically convicted felons after serving their time and left state supervision were given automatically the right to vote. And since 2011, Governor Brandstad has changed that. A felon has to go through an application process, and then the governor decides if he or she can vote again. And that means there are around 14,000 felons in the state who can't vote. We're talking with a few people this half hour who want to change that. Justin McCarthy, a convicted felon from Dubuque, and Steve Drahozal, a Dubuque-based attorney who has written a petition at the request of the NAACP. Perhaps it's here. Justin McCarthy, you are not an African-American?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so we just wanted to make that clear. Steve was talking about it hits African-Americans in this case more than white Americans. Jeremy Rosen is also with us in our Des Moines studio, executive director of the ACLU of Iowa. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi, good to be here.
Good to be with you. Now, you have taken a different approach to the goal of restoring voting rights to convicted felons who have served their sentences in Iowa. What is that? It's a lawsuit. What is the basis of it?
Certainly. First of all, we certainly agree with our other guest this afternoon. From a policy perspective, there's simply no reason that Iowa should be one of only three states in this country that does not recognize that after folks have served their time and paid their debt to society, they should have their rights restored automatically. So we're in full support of efforts to raise awareness around the issue. We're in full support of the executive order issued by Governor Vilsack and continued by Governor Culver. That being said, we're also taking a legal approach to focus on this issue, and we have filed a lawsuit here in Polk County arguing that certain crimes should not, in fact, be classified as infamous crimes that would disqualify an individual from voting under the state constitution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it really comes down to what Steve mentioned there before, that you're saying infamous doesn't 100% of the time mean a felony. A felony is not always infamous.
Well, that's absolutely right. And the state Supreme Court, in a previous decision last year, really opened the door to this argument. There was a case that involved whether or not an official had the right to run for public office. And the Supreme Court ruled that a particular drunk driving offense was not, in fact, an infamous crime. And another language in that decision really hinted that in a subsequent case, there would be the potential for a ruling that, in fact, not all felonies should be considered infamous crimes. It's important to recognize, I think, that when the state constitution was drafted, and this is what the court indicated last year, the intent was really to make sure that folks who are convicted of absolutely the most serious crimes had their voting rights taken away permanently, and that many others would not have that happen to them.
So list some of the infamous crimes that we can say for sure are in the category rights to vote being taken away permanently.
I think it's hard to say how the court's going to look at this, but certainly our perspective is that nonviolent offenses, including nonviolent drug offenses, should not be included as infamous crimes, and that's what we're arguing in this case. We're arguing that very specifically on behalf of our particular client, but are hopeful for a broader decision that, in fact, will impact many of the 14,000 people who are now being disenfranchised.
At what stage is your lawsuit? Where is it now?
The case has been filed here in Polk County. It has survived an initial motion by the state to be dismissed, and we're optimistic that the court's going to move forward later this year and issue a decision. Certainly, it seems likely that no matter which way that decision goes, the case will ultimately be decided by the state Supreme Court.
Mm, okay. There's a case of perjury, a woman charged in perjury last year that is tied up in this change. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So our client, Kelly Jo Griffin, is a mom of three who, in fact, was convicted for a nonviolent drug offense, served her time, and under the policies established by Governor Vilsack and Governor Culver through executive order, was able to have her voting rights restored. Fortunately, when Governor Branstad changed the policy, she'd gone out to vote and taken her kids with her to show them the importance of civic participation, and was actually arrested and charged with fraudulent voting. Shockingly, the case was actually prosecuted, but not surprisingly, in about 30 seconds, she was found not to have any intent to have fraudulently voted.
Okay. talking about whether offenders, Iowa felons, can should automatically regain their voting rights after they've served their time and left state supervision, or whether they need to go through an application process, as the governor of Iowa says they should. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Talking about this for another few minutes, let's go to Suzanne calling in from Grinnell. Hello, Suzanne. You've been listening. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, yes. Before I say what I'm going to say, that I believe that all people, once they've served their time, should be able to vote. But I think this disproportionately affects, as the man from the NAACP said, people of color, because as has come out recently in light of some of the police cases, there is a disproportionate incarceration and higher penalties and crimes judged on people of color than their white counterparts. So if you've got more people coming into the system and judged more harshly based on their skin color or ethnicity, then it makes sense that also you're going to get more people that can't vote based on that. And that seems to be exacerbating a problem that we're already trying to explore and turn around. And so it just seems to add insult to injury. And it seems like we're going the wrong direction. We're trying to solve these problems and make sure everybody's equal and under the law.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne, did you have a question to follow that up?
No, I just feel that we're doing injustice to people.
Okay.
People can change, and I guess that's the basis of, you know, we don't spend a lot of time trying to help people to do that, but that's the point.
Okay, Suzanne, calling from Grinnell. Thank you very much. Going to you, Justin McCarthy. You feel as once you were released from prison and done with your probation that society, does it give you a second chance? This is one way in which you say it isn't.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I know recently I've been having an issue attempting to find employment. I went back to school for welding, and I'm just about done. I'll be done in May. I've been on the dean's list 2 semesters. And going out and trying to find a job, there's some places that just won't look at your application because you've been convicted of a felony,
mm-hmm.
which is, I understand they don't want to spend the time looking into why he had a felony, and they don't want, you know, some crazy person in their workforce or whatnot, but.
All right. Alexis is joining us from Davenport. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Alexis, how do you see this?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay. My question was this. While I was listening, they mentioned that you could petition to the governor to get your voting rights back, and you would have to pay to get your criminal history. Now, that to me seems like a form of voting tax, because you're having to pay to get something in order to get your voting rights. And I just was kind of questioning the constitutionality of that.
Hmm. Steve Drahozal, can you comment on that?
I would agree with that, and I'm glad that someone picked up on that. That it is, it does appear to be a poll tax. And a poll tax, for those who are not familiar with that, is a tax that was enacted after Reconstruction in a lot of southern states to prevent blacks from voting. And poll taxes have been recognized as unconstitutional in our country. It is because voting is what is legally called a fundamental right. It is absolutely one of the most important rights, and we don't tax people for that. To my knowledge, I'm unaware of anybody legally challenging the current status of the law or of the governor's policy as a poll tax, but that is something that when I found out that there was a cost associated with that, that's exactly what I thought of, is that this seems to be a poll tax.
Okay,
right.
Good point. Thank you, Alexis, for calling from Davenport. Let's go to Kent in Muscatine. Hi, Kent, what's your question?
Well, it's as much a comment as it is a question, and the continual use of the word restore should speak to listeners, those that have a faith background, to say this is a component of restorative justice. Whether we're looking at alternatives to incarceration, whether we're looking at the disparity between races of those that are incarcerated, something such as restoring voter rights or banning the box, as one of your speakers had mentioned, the challenge of finding a job and having that to fill in that box on the application, These are components of restorative justice, which people of faith, all people of goodwill, need to be aware of and to realize that we've got a responsibility to make sure that returning citizens are given their rights.
Okay, Kent in Muscatine, thank you for calling. We've got a couple minutes left. I wanted to get a comment from each of you. Jeremy Rosen, there is also, I understand, a bill pending in the Iowa and an Iowa Senate committee that would automatically restore voting rights to felons once they've served their sentences. Do you think that will have much of a chance in this year's session?
I think we're always hopeful. That being said, obviously, with the makeup of the legislature, it's going to be a challenge to move anything forward on this issue. I think as much public attention as we can draw to it, that will only help us push the issue forward. And certainly given the governor's position, I think even if a bill did get through, it would be surprising to see him sign that bill.
Steve Drahozal, tell us, where is your petition now? How many people's names are on it?
We put it online a week ago Sunday, and right now we have 121 people who have signed it. It's on a website called change.org, and what we're trying to get the word out so that as many people as possible can see that. I think the final deadline is next week, but hopefully to show legislators and the governor that Iowans do believe in rehabilitation and do believe in fairness and maybe help push that bill in the Senate forward.
Okay. Justin McCarthy, the final word to you. If you were standing before the governor, had the governor's ear at this moment, what would you want to tell him about your circumstance to convince him that this law should be otherwise?
Well, I mean, I just want him to know that, you know, if we're going to be rehabilitating people in prison instead of just punishing them, then why, when we get out, are we just still treated as a second-class citizen? Mm-hmm. I just want to know what he's afraid of, what's going to happen if we start voting.
You mentioned you have a family, right?
Yep, I have a 5-year-old daughter, a 2-year-old daughter.
Is this, I suppose that the 2-year-old's out of the question. The 5-year-old, is something you can talk with her about it?
I've talked to her a little bit about it. I don't want to try to draw too many adult themes into conversation.
Right.
She is just 5. But
she is a little young for the conversation we're having this half hour. We appreciate you joining us, Justin McCarthy from Dubuque, Steve Drahozal, a Dubuque-based attorney, and Jeremy Rosen, executive director of the ACLU of Iowa. Thank you for this conversation.
Thanks. You're very welcome. Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment in the second half hour, do you know what silt is? Well, this silt is a little different. Perhaps you don't know about it. It's the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. And we'll find out what it's about, how people can set aside land or transfer land is what we're talking about in our second half hour. Are you a farmer who's trying to find land? You'll want to listen in this next half hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.